Chapter 7, The 50th Edition. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. In the year of this jubilee, ye shall return every man unto his own possession. Leviticus. Is not the new science and health intended to be the teacher for the future, thus to do away with incorrect teaching and the oral instruction of human teachers? Christian Science Journal, 1890. The trials that our leader passed through during the 2 years of labor on the revision of science and health are almost beyond human comprehension. Her life had never seen ease, but during this period there were times when she was not sure that she could endure. In August of 1890, she had written to General Bates, "I want to remain with you on earth long enough to see my revised edition of Science and Health published. I need say no more." Of this tribulation, few were aware, albeit signs or scars were there for all the world to see. At the time of her last class in March of 1889, the teacher had a youthful appearance and lovely dark hair, but ages of spiritual growth in the following months had left their imprint. Clara Shannon wrote of this. When Mrs. Eddy was revising the 50th edition of Science and Health, she was living in a furnished house, 62 North State Street, Concord, New Hampshire. She was passing through deep waters at that time and wrote to ask me to call and see her on my way to Boston, to her Students' Association of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. I went and was so grateful for the great privilege of the visit. In her letter, she wrote that her hair had turned white, and I must not be surprised when I saw her. When she greeted me in the drawing room, I was very much moved, as I could see by her face what deep waters she was passing through. She said to me, "The cup is bitter, bitter." The tears came to my eyes. She looked up and said, "But the Father makes it sweet." And she talked to me in a way I have never forgotten. Her hair's turning white was not the only effect of her long siege with animal magnetism. In December of 1890, she wrote in a letter to her son, George Glover, "I am 50 pounds lighter than when you saw me last, but I am in divine health." She remained light as a feather and slim as a willow wand the rest of her days on earth, but she was more ageless than aged by these changes. 17 years later, when Arthur Brisbane interviewed her, he wrote, "Mrs. Eddy is 86 years old. She is of medium height and very slender. She probably weighs less than 100 pounds, but her figure is straight. The grasp of her thin hand is firm. The hand does not tremble." It is hopeless to try to describe a face made very beautiful by age, deep thought, and many years' exercise of great power. The light blue eyes are strong and concentrated in expression. Mrs. Eddy's face is almost entirely free from wrinkles. The skin is very clear. Many a young woman would be proud to have it. Her work on the revision was finished by the end of 1890. And although it was the latter half of January in 1891, before it was off the press, and the date on the title page was 1891, Mrs. Eddy often referred to it as the revision of 1890. It was the last Sunday in January that Reverend Norcross announced from the pulpit that he was about to read from the new edition. The February Journal stated that it was expected to be issued on or about January 25th, 1891, but the Journal for March sounded the trumpet of rejoicing, proclaiming the Jubilee. The new book, Fiat Lux, Let There Be Light. The long looked for, much coveted volume of Science and Health that is to mark an epoch in the Christian Science movement has at last appeared, and it will be eagerly searched, studied, pored over by every student among us. From this date forward, the thought of all true scientists will mount higher, and there will appear correspondingly glorious results in the wide and practical field of demonstration. Yet a full understanding of the book will come only as the ripened fruit of years of study combined with faithful daily effort to reduce its teachings to practice. No adequate idea of the treasures disclosed in this volume can be given in a single article. But a few points out of many will here be touched upon. First, why is a revised edition of Science and Health a necessity? Does not the issuing of a revision reflect upon former editions as being faulty or incomplete? The present writer was queried only last summer upon this very point. One antagonizer of Science and Health, having heard that a new volume was anticipated, in fact was to be in press ere long, asked in tones suggestive of a sneer, "Can inspiration be added to or taken from? Who, for an instant, would think of adding to or subtracting from the sayings of Jesus? And did Paul or John ever think of getting out a revised edition of their works?" To all of which was added the statement, "The early edition, that of 1875, was incomparably superior to any that has since appeared." The precise reply made is of little moment, but its substance is eminently germane to our present line of thought. That is to say, inspiration is not a mechanical process of repeating mere words by rote, of sounding them up in just so many sentences and no more. It is not a lifeless force which can be caught and imprisoned in a word or a volume, as a taxidermist would stuff birds, always to present the same stiff, glassy appearance. It is rather the kaleidoscopic presentation of the beauty and wondrous power, not of some new truth heretofore unheard of, but of an eternally existing spiritual fact, unfolding and forever re-unfolding itself to eyes that see. Were Paul, John, or Jesus to return again in the flesh to teach us the same glorious truth taught in the long-buried past, would either one confine himself to the same words, the same figures of speech, the same illustrations so well known to Bible students of today? Rather, would not each address himself faithfully to the task of clearing up difficulties, of removing doubts as to his precise meaning in certain passages and upon certain points that as yet seem obscure to our sense? A teacher of grammar, even, one who, year in and year out, is teaching class after class the same grammatical truths or facts, cannot and does not invariably repeat the same stereotyped expressions. Just in proportion as he combines the essentials of a teacher, in proportion as he embodies the essence of true teaching, will his illustrations and combinations of facts be accommodated to the needs of the learner and attended with fresh impulses of discernment. In the days of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, when we sat at the feet of our teacher, days that we never shall forget, did that teacher ever instruct two classes precisely alike? Did she employ a stereotyped form of words by which to convey to us her rich, inspired thought? Far from it. And thus the new volume seems to take us back to the college to gather up its fresh methods and inspired sayings, so that little stretch of the imagination is required to convince us that the teacher herself again is before us, though this time in impersonal form. But the book itself, is there anything new in it? Does it contain any new facts and truths? No and yes. Certainly, there are no new facts or truths presented, because there are no new facts or truths to present. Truth is never new and never old, but is eternally fresh and living as the author herself explains. In this sense, could there be anything new in the new book? For was it not the truth, and the truth only, which was told before? Her revision has, however, extended the same ideas and made them clear, so that science and health shall not be misunderstood and misstated. To find in the new volume some new, grand, hitherto unexpressed truth would of itself impugn the old. The student of the new will find the landmarks of the old, all untouched. God, as Spirit, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, all in all, is taught here. Man, as made in his image and likeness, still retains his place here. Creation, as a spiritual, eternal, glorious fact from center to remotest circumference, also appears here. The scientific statement of being, unchanged by so much as a letter, is here. Evil, mortal mind, in the new edition appears just as base and treacherous a liar as in the old. All this and more in the same vein can be said, and yet there is a sense in which do appear many new things, many faces and angles never before seen are here presented to view. Fresh modes or ways of bringing out practical facts are adopted, as, for instance, On page 360 to 366 inclusive, again, throughout almost the entire chapter on teaching Christian Science, chapter 13. Also, the opening pages of Genesis and of the Apocalypse are studded with new thoughts. Nor are these the only pages whereon gleam gems not seen before. These are simply cited as conspicuous examples of interest to all readers, present or prospective, of the 50th edition of Science and Health, as indicating the presence of new veins of gold which appear therein. The simple fact is, the thought of scientists all along the line has mounted higher, and so treasures both new and old are given to us. Our teacher has complimented us. We can now be taken higher up toward the mountaintop, until we all with unveiled face, reflecting as a mirror the glory of the Lord, are transformed into the same image, from glory to glory, even as from the Lord the Spirit. In regard to logical arrangement, the division of chapters is a marked improvement upon that of former editions. The chapter on healing and teaching has become two separate chapters, as it manifestly should, while prayer and atonement also, for the first time, appear under separate caption. Imposition and demonstration will hereafter be studied as Christian Science, contrasted with spiritualism. The logical arrangement being entirely subserved thereby. Many will miss the platform of Christian Science as a distinct chapter, but it will be found at the close of the long chapter on Science of Being, where it properly belongs. The chapter on marriage has been shortened, but since the advanced Christian Science thought is preparing for it, the detached portions have been transferred elsewhere in a form which gives them added power. The contents of pages 411, 412, 446, 447 should be studied carefully. The chapter on animal magnetism also stands abridged. Yet the missing thoughts reappear elsewhere in hints and suggestions, whose practical value renders them of vital interest to all readers and students. Critical attention is called to the first chapter in the book, entitled Science, Theology, Medicine, especially to the 9th page, where the classification is not only scientific, but of such orderly arrangement as greatly to aid the learner's memory. Again, every student familiar with former editions will remark upon the change made at the heading of chapters. That is to say, the substitution of scripture texts for quotations from classic authors, which better adapts the work to maintain the place it holds in sacred writings. 40 pages of new matter are added, and yet this is far from an adequate statement, since throughout the entire volume there is scarcely a page that does not bear traces of the fresh touch of the master hand of the author. Though favorite paragraphs and expressions reappear, they have nearly all been retouched until they glisten like burnished gold. Is not the new science in health intended to be the teacher for the future, thus to do away with incorrect teaching and the oral instruction of human teachers? Again, is it chiefly designed for primary or better fitted for normal and obstetric students? These are questions that are perhaps natural, and yet if the writer mistake not, they are idle questions also. The work is intended for all ages, grades, and classes, for the child just beginning to prattle, and for the aged grandsire, for the novitiate just entering upon the study of Christian Science, and for the student who has made, as human language expresses it, the greatest advance. Without wishing to establish any dictum, the writer cannot refrain from giving expression to his conviction that this volume gradually will supersede all teaching in the technical sense of the word, and further, that it will prove great gain for the cause of truth when that day arrives. Attention is specially called to what is said on page 440 in the paragraph beginning with line 9. In fact, this entire chapter merits profoundest attention. While, as before stated, this volume is for all grades and classes, it is but pertinent to say that the most conscientious, painstaking, and experienced student will advance fastest. There can be no imperative law laid down regarding John's Gospel, Paul to the Hebrews, or Revelation, to the effect that these are only for advanced Christians to study. Certainly they are for all learners. No hedges are put around them to keep any away. Yet who does not know that the experienced miner will more readily and directly delve to those subterranean depths containing the precious veins of gold? So it will be with the new volume, and we shall very soon come to realize that we have in hand a golden key with which to unlock the treasure house of the Bible. The author expresses it as treasures of truth first thrown by Revelation into her grasp, and now adjusted to be more readily seen. In closing, a few general observations are worthy a place. First, every careful student will discover that the new volume is preeminently a book of the Spirit. This is not to intimate a lack in the letter, but to claim that the conscientious student of the new science and health cannot long remain in the letter merely. He will be taken out of that into the unfolding glories of truth. Especially will he be led to a realization that to be a genuine Christian Scientist, love must become the sole law of his being, its beginning and end. The letter is all expressed. Otherwise, the book could not be what it should be. But it does not appear as a skeletonized system of abstract doctrine. It is clothed in radiant grace and loveliness, which cause us to forget its presence as mere letter. And indeed, is it not time we turned our attention higher? In truth, The evangelistic spirit of this new science and health is its crowning merit. Christian science becomes something for practical, everyday life. Thus, more and more, will it be recognized as being not a mere theory, but a life of individual goodness and truth. Second, this new volume continues to be a rebuke to the personal senses, and as such will prove no more acceptable to the sensualist than have former editions. In fact, it must prove less so, since it takes us upon higher ground. Hence, if any have been anticipating a treatise that should prove a bridge between the seen and the unseen, between sense and soul, which would render Christian science more concordant with the testimony of material sense, or its exactments less severe, they are doomed to disappointment. Christian science in the new volume explains nothing to carnal or mortal mind to gratify its curiosity or to render easier a compliance with its mandates. Instead, the book will be found to be arrayed against all error, and it will not be surprising if even in us many errors that hitherto have been smoldering are now by its perusal aroused to hostility. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, is a sentiment which will find practical exemplification in the mind of many of us on rising from study of the new work. Third, the new science and health will prove to many an invitation to the wedding feast. Write, blessed are they who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. Happy indeed are they who, having on the wedding garment, come and come as to a feast spread for all, a feast where understanding, truth, joy, and love nourish and sustain our fainting sense. Fourth, a practical suggestion or two regarding study of the new edition. In the first place, do not attempt to dispose of the earlier editions. Some are asking, can we be permitted to exchange? Probably not, but you do not want to do so, even if you can. Fortunate is he who has all former revisions, together with the original edition of 1875. They are indications of successive stages of growth in Christian science, and as such, at some future day, will not only possess historic value, but will be exceedingly difficult to procure. Keep them all. They will prove a treasure trove. Again, let the new volume be studied in connection with earlier editions. The very contrasts help to see how the thoughts have risen only as we have been able to receive them. This again will reveal why the new edition could now be written for us. It is simply because the advancing thought or demonstration of Christian scientists has ascended to that plane, which makes it both possible and practicable for us to have the new work. This 7-page article, retitled Science and Health by Mary Baker G. Eddy, and with Reverend Norcross' name added as author, was the leader once again in the April 1891 journal. Hundreds of additional copies of this April issue were reprinted and sold for 5 cents a copy. Mrs. Eddy knew the import of this new revision, and she wanted to be sure that Christian Scientists learned and profited from the great forward spiritual strides that she had made. She had done more than lead the children to the promised land. She was entering in before them as their ensample, a leader truly to be followed every step of the way. She knew the worth of her work and expressed it in a letter to John Lathrop on the 3rd of January. My work for the world this last year will go on through all time. I feel that you all have in my book, Science and Health, the anchor of your being that will prove sure and steadfast in storm and shine. Oh, how thankful I am that God has enabled me to give to you, my dear children in Christ, a rich inheritance. Doctor of Divine Science. The advertisements for the Massachusetts Metaphysical College included for several years a course in theology. An explanation of degrees conferred by the college was published in the journal in 1886 and included the following: DSD, Doctor of Divine Science, is given after the course in theology, combined with 3 years of practice to those who have obtained a correct knowledge of the spiritual signification of the scriptures and conformed their lives to the teachings of Christ Jesus. In 1889, the advertisement for the college stated, "Class in Science of Theology completes the collegiate course. Students who have completed the college course and are qualified in every respect graduate." No student of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College ever graduated. In fact, not one of Mrs. Eddy's students ever qualified for the class in the science of theology. That divine course was taught in 1889 and 1890. But God was the teacher, and Mary Baker Eddy was the one pupil. She had learned that this divinity course can never be taught in a classroom in a few hours, because it demands absolute consecration to principle every minute of every hour of every day. When she closed her college in 1889, she published The Way, wherein she stated, "The student who heals by teaching and teaches by healing will graduate under divine honors, which are the only appropriate seals for Christian Science." The demands made upon her during the revising of Science and Health were severe indeed, but she had not failed. She had graduated under divine honors. At the time of the Jubilee, the March Journal proclaimed the good news, but that issue included another very interesting feature. On the cover was the name Mary Baker Eddy, DSD, the only person ever so designated. That March issue was number 12 of Volume 8. And our leader continued to be so described on the journal covers for all of Volume 9. Quote, "She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates." End quote.